Welcome to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. Hi, I'm David Manti, and welcome to a new episode of the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. With me this week is Shay Coakley, co-founder and CEO of High Tide. How are you doing today, Shay?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing excellent. Very much looking forward to it today. But before we get started, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You could also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. You can email the podcast. You can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com. You can also subscribe to our daily newsletter and make sure you get it delivered to your inbox first. I always like to start with a little bit of background, Shay. How did you get into cannabis?
Yeah, I think that's always a good place to start. So I've been an entrepreneur for about 13, 14 years. So I've always had that entrepreneurial bug, left the sort of traditional 9-to-5 about 13, 14 years ago. And, you know, for me, I've always been in these spaces that are sort of, you know, they're not solving these gigantic world problems, but at the end of the day, they're just making people's, you know, day-to-day, minute-to-minute, maybe a little bit happier. So I had a healthy food business for a while, a cold brew coffee company, a convention, a lot of different things in the entrepreneurial space. And along the way, I had met who is now my best friend, a guy by the name of Joshua Grab, who's my business partner in High Tide. And we had started kicking around this idea probably about 6-7 years ago about the idea of the form factor of a cannabis beverage. And that started the journey. But for us, you know, professionally, it wasn't great timing. I had some things going on, some entrepreneurial ventures. He was working on a growth marketing firm for the beverage space. And it just wasn't great timing for us personally. But in addition, cannabis beverages, as you and your audience, probably a lot of folks know, it was still like very, very, very early days. So we've kind of been watching the segment from afar. But always personally had a passion for the idea of a truly social experience for cannabis. You know, so I'm here in Massachusetts, so I'm talking to you just south of Boston right now. And Massachusetts is a good example of a state where there is a destigmatization of cannabis going on. But the form factors are still a little bit odd for social use. You know, it's like the smoking a joint at a backyard barbecue or taking a gummy before a sports game or a tailgate. It's still a little bit of an odd way to consume cannabis. So we've always been big believers in, you know, beverages are the sort of the social mechanism of choice for most people. So, you know, a lot of this, it was really, you know, sort of both sides of the coin. We saw a huge business opportunity because at the end of the day, this is a business. But we also personally very much believe, and I could get into this over the course of the next half an hour, 45 minutes. But we personally believe in this as a relaxation method of choice. We think it's, you know, if we fast forward out 10, 20, 30 years, we firmly believe that cannabis beverages are going to be as ubiquitous as alcohol in the United States, and for all sorts of reasons I'm sure we're going to dig on into. But, you know, so what drove us into the business was really, you know, I'm an entrepreneur by trade. My business partner has been in beverage for 20 plus years. You know, he was early at Sam Adams, Zing Zang, Crook & Marker, Fiji, you name it, has been with like very, very high growth beverage organizations. So it's a molding of our own personal passion, which is this is a beverage that we've created that we want to be in the world, and a crazy business opportunity.
When did you decide that you wanted to go the entrepreneur route and decide to leave your 9-to-5?
Oh, God. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I still remember to this day. So it's funny you ask that question right now, because I was just on the phone with my mentor before this call, and my mentor, who's been my mentor for, you know, 10 plus years now, I was working for him at a consulting firm, and I remember being about 2 weeks into the job, and he sat me down, brought me into his office, and he said, "What do you want to be doing with this firm in 2 years, 4 years, 10 years, whatever?" And I said, "Oh, I'm not going to be working here in 3 years." And he kind of looked at me like I had 10 heads. And I remember saying something like, "Well, yeah, I mean, what I really want to do is I want to be in your seat. I want to own companies. I want to create things from scratch." So this has always been in the back of my head. And, you know, I will say I gave him a really good 3-4 years. and busted my ass, and I think I did some great stuff for him. And when it was time for me to take the leap, he was right there supporting me along the way. So, you know, for me, I had that situation where I left like a fairly lucrative career, and something that was going quite well for me, knowing that I was not going to be happy unless I like sort of put my stamp on the world. So, you know, it was around 26 that I sort of got into the first entrepreneurial journeys of my life. And once I got a taste of what it was like to create something from nothing and see that product out in the world, it was sort of off to the races from them. My business partner, Josh, has always worked for other companies and their growth in the beverage sector. And, you know, for him, I think he saw sort of what I was doing and being able to own companies and create your own destiny. And I think for him, you know, the thing he said is he was kind of sick of making other people money and, you know, having them have all the glory and not be able to put his stamp on the world. So we both had it at different timelines. But for me, it was about 26, 27 years old, so fairly early in my career where I went down the entrepreneurial path.
What are some of the things that you learned from that path that you plan on bringing to High Tide?
Oh God, there's so many, but one of the things that's been a constant theme in my head is like this idea that once you just decide like, hey, there's a gap here and I could potentially do that gap. I think once you've done that once, it opens up this entire world of possibility for you. Because, you know, when I was sort of like, well, let's call it sitting on the sidelines of entrepreneurship, when I was, you know, I worked for a company, and I'm not judging that. That's a great path. I often convince people that they shouldn't be an entrepreneur because it can be a real nightmare sometimes, and it's not for everybody. But when you go through and you say like, hey, there's something that should exist and it doesn't, and then you actually follow through on that, that experience like opens up all these synapses in your brain where you look at things totally different. So I'll give an example. When I had run this corporate food service technology company called Leanbox back in the day, we were going to all these conventions, and the conventions didn't quite have what we wanted as a provider. We were sort of a non-traditional benefit to offices. And I thought in my head, well, there should be a convention where all these sort of interesting, fringe, non-traditional benefits should get together with companies and they should have a convention. So we just built one. And that was something that, like, you know, when I first started my entrepreneurial journey, I never would have thought of doing. But I thought, okay, like, I've been able to build something before. If no one else is doing this, why can't I do this? So we feel the same way about cannabis beverages right now, right? Cannabis beverages are so new that this isn't a space where you can just look and say, it's not like Coca-Cola, right? Or Budweiser. You can't just look at people and say like, oh, if we only follow their path and get a small percentage of that market, then we're good to go. For us, when we look at this, it's like the entire game, the plane is being built mid-flight. And that's what's so attractive about the space, honestly, is that, you know, it's a chessboard that the pieces are constantly moving around. And myself and Josh and the rest of the team we've assembled, we feel really comfortable and confident in that environment, that every month that goes by, there's a new set of decisions and a new chessboard that we have to tackle. And for some, that would be an absolute nightmare, and I can understand that. But for us, it's where we feel comfortable. So that's one of the pieces I'm going to take into this. I would say the other piece sounds so simple, but I don't think is the way everybody necessarily looks at it, which is like our first reaction when we look at the cannabis space is like, where can we have win-wins? Where can we collaborate? And I've learned through previous ventures that, you know, the I want my piece of the pie and I want to grab it and hold on to it and not share it with anybody is just a terrible long-term business play. Like, it might be able to get you a little bit of advantage short-term, but for us, like, the way that we're looking at it, we've dug into the space so firmly. We've tried to meet everybody we can possibly meet, get our names out in the world, let them know that we're passionate about this space and we have the best intentions. And for us, whenever we have a conversation, whether it's, you know, a co-packer or it's a dispensary or even other beverages that are theoretically directly competitive to us, our first thought is, can we collaborate with them? Is there something that we can do together that we all grow? So, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a universal theory on entrepreneurship. I think there are a lot of people that just say, I'm going to go get mine and that's it. And I get it. I get why people want to do that. They've built something, they're passionate about it, and they want to hold on to it dearly. But what I've found over the years is finding win-wins with partners, particularly it's even more important in the cannabis space because it's so new and it's moving so fast. So, you know, I think a big portion of what I'll take from previous ventures that's been successful is how can we find partnerships that everybody wins? That's really a huge one for us to take into cannabis.
In your previous ventures, do you build them up and then sell them off, or do you keep them in a portfolio and remain active with them?
Yeah, that has been traditionally the case. You know, they're sort of venture-backed businesses that eventually, you know, they get handed over to the grown-ups, so to speak. I think that's sort of for a number of different reasons. I think that's the natural course of a lot of ventures, that at some point you have this sort of establishment that has extremely deep pockets and also strategic inroads to the places that you would want to take the company. So again, that's another area where I think, you know, it's not about just like dumping off a business to someone else. It's about finding win-wins. And sometimes that exit process can be, look, you've just hit a point where you need more management over it, or you need a deeper pocket, or you need access to a broader market. And that's always been the case in the businesses that I've done, where it hits that natural point where maybe from a management perspective, we could still keep piling on. But it just makes a lot of sense. And I could see that happening in this space, right? You know, you're having these huge beverage companies and CPG companies that are starting to really take good looks at cannabis. And I could see us getting to a place eventually where we say, you know what? It would be really beneficial for us to strategically partner with a group that has the infrastructure of a, well, I'm not going to say the names, but, you know, the names that you would know, and to use their infrastructure and their funding to get High Tide out to the world. So I could definitely see that happening. I will say, though, that, you know, I'll be totally transparent and say that when I got in the cannabis space originally, when we first started thinking about this, I had thought of it as sort of an in and out.
Yep.
So I thought I'd be in here. I would do a venture in cannabis, maybe last 2-3 years, bounce out, move on to something else. And that is just being real transparent on this. And I will say that over the course of the process of diving into cannabis, I have developed a passion that I never thought would necessarily exist. I think I've heard the stories of people that have been helped by cannabis and the things that it's done for them. And it's developed a real passion for me that is going to be around for a long time. And I know Josh, my partner, feels the same way. You know, I think there's a lot of interesting things going on in the world that oddly cannabis can be the antidote for. I think we lack social connection in meaningful ways. I think the world has become stressful in ways that were never stressful before. I think there's all sorts of market conditions or even just human conditions that cannabis can be the answer for. So I will say that, like, you know, the format with which the various ventures I do and Josh does and we do together in cannabis, I can't predict how those are going to go, when and if we'd sell High Tide, if we'd start other ventures, like, I can't predict how that's all going to go. It's going to be on a case-by-case basis. But what I can tell you is that over the last couple years, 3 years, I've developed a passion for the space that really might lock me in here for the rest of my life. And that's a good thing. I view that as great.
I feel like this is a unique industry in that it does that to quite a few people. Do you have a personal connection to the plant at all?
Sure. Yeah, I can tell you that I definitely do. And what I was referring to earlier, myself and my partner are very much advocates because of our own experience. So I can tell you both for myself, and I know Josh doesn't mind me sharing this, In our own due time, we both decided that alcohol wasn't working for us, that it was this promise that never came to fruition. I grew up in a town that was, we had t-shirts in our general store that was, it would, they said, Marshfield, a drinking town with a fishing problem. So this was like ingrained, like, you know, relaxation, social life. It was like alcohol was like so very ingrained in that. And eventually I got to a place where I was like this, I was just drinking on weekends and weddings and concerts and whatever, just because it was like what you did. Like it was just what I thought everybody did. And over the years, I got less and less enjoyment out of that. And sometimes a hell of a whole lot of pain. By the time you hit about 30 years old, the hangovers go from, you know, a couple hours to like days. And I just started, you know, getting really disenchanted with the promise of alcohol. So I will say for us personally, we're firm believers, like, look, cannabis isn't for everybody, just like alcohol is not for everybody, just like anything else. But we're very passionate about the idea that there is another option that could be a lot better for a lot of people, ourselves included. You know, the idea of getting used to socializing with cannabis as opposed to alcohol can, I think, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, I think it can be a lifesaver for some people. And I'm not advocating that this is something everybody in the world should do, but I think that when people try it and they experience what it's like to be socially lubricated and comfortable and have genuine, meaningful connections while utilizing cannabis, I think that can be a real life-changing thing for people.
I agree with you, especially hitting that inflection point where of diminishing returns with alcohol. And I certainly can relate to the city with a drinking city with a fishing problem. Being in Wisconsin, it's like a rite of passage. It's, you know, everyone embraces that, we're the drunkest state by like multiples. I'm like, I don't know if that's a good thing. But so I'm interested that kind of draws you to the cannabis beverage space, because did you find after alcohol had passed by that you were in these social situations still looking for, you know, a beverage? Because you had mentioned how you don't get the same with smoking at a party or an edible at a party. I've had similar experiences, and I have friends with similar experiences, where it's like when you're at a party and not actively drinking in front of people, it's like, no, I don't know, but I took an edible, I swear.
Right. Yes. Okay. So that's totally true. Couple things to break down here. Let's start with like my own experience, and then I'll go to a broader audience because I think that might be interesting to point out. So in my own experience, first off, I don't think there should ever be anything wrong to going to a party and not consuming anything. Like, let's get that clear, right? So, like, I think it's very weird where, like, sometimes, like, I'll go to a party and I'll mention I don't drink and people look at me like I have 10 heads. And I think that's wrong. Like, it's weird that we have a drug that people judge you for not using. Like, people don't do that with cannabis, you know? If you say you don't use cannabis, you don't get judged for that. Like, alcohol is a weird thing that people have opinions. And it's a really personal thing for people. And I think people should have the right to, I don't think there should ever be a follow-up question after, hey, would you like a glass of wine or a beer? And they say no. I don't think there should ever be a follow-up question. You know what I mean? So I'll get that out of the way. I will say, though, that, like, you know, sometimes for me, there is like this sort of like social communion that's going on that I think cannabis can be a really good alternative for people who, for whatever reason, don't want alcohol. So like it might be people that maybe just that night they don't want alcohol, right? Or that month, or they're taking a break or whatever. So there's that subset of people. There's other people that just say like, I'm putting alcohol in the rearview mirror. But every once in a while, I'd like to have something that would be like a little bit of a social lubricant that we could laugh and have a good time and enjoy ourselves. And I think there's a big market for that. I also think one of the things that I've realized, and this is probably only in the last like couple years that I've realized this, is the generation. So I'm 38 years old. The generation below me. So let's call it like 21 to even 30, but I'll say 21 to like 26, 27. I am so bullish on that generation. Like, they understand so much about how to live a fulfilling life that, like, I think my generation may be kicked off, but they're like fully living. And this is a lot of different things. They are very open, honest, and concentrated on their own mental health. They're not willing to sacrifice their own mental health for a job that they hate, for example. They are into health and wellness in a way that is so much better than generations before. There's a lot of things that I just think they're a better generation than ones that have come before. And one of the ways that's interesting is alcohol use. So this younger generation, I think, realizes that probably earlier than my generation did, certainly the generation above me, they realize that alcohol can sometimes be a little bit of a con. And look, let me get out there too. For people who like enjoy alcohol and want to have a few drinks on a night out, like, I don't judge that. I just like to put out there that there's like another way to go through life. And there's other options out there. Cannabis being one of them. But this generation, like, I've gone out with groups in great cities and environments where if I was 24, I would have been out till 3 o'clock in the morning at some club or bar, who knows what else. And like, they know to like tuck under their covers at 10 o'clock at night because they got a big day the next morning. This was a foreign concept to me in my 20s. So in addition to this concept, I think you have a generation that is re-looking at their consumption levels of alcohol and looking for more what I would call mindful alternatives. So I think that market, you know, you're going to have later generations that are maybe transitioning the way they look at things. I think you have a younger market that is just never going to get deeply tied into alcohol, at least some subset of them. So it's interesting.
Is that why you looked specifically at cannabis-infused mocktails and specifically margaritas, kind of trying to cater to that crowd a little bit?
Yeah, I do think that, look, like the standard thing that we all do, and I don't know, you know, why it's been molded into our society over the years, but the standard thing that we do when we get together for a tailgate, for a game, for a backyard barbecue, for a concert, for dinner, whatever, it involves beverages. I think people just like the idea of sitting around and consuming beverages. And consuming the right beverages can be a real experience. So let's just take like two different examples. So if you were to take a gummy, right, before a party, you get what, 3 seconds of a flavor profile that's in your mouth? I always think it's funny when they get like super in depth with all these gummies. And like, look, I'm not against gummies. It's a great avenue for consumption. But when people get like really caught up in like this flavor or that flavor of the gummy, I'm kind of like, it's like a pill. It's like you take it and it's gone. Beverages are a totally different experience. They're when done the right way, they're culinary. They are a truly craft experience. So if you're someone who's like gone to like a really high-end craft cocktail bar, it's an art that goes into that. And I think one of the things that drove us to the form factor of a beverage, it's not only that this is just what we do in social settings, but one of the things that we were seeing out there that we thought, this isn't being done exactly the right way, is we wanted a truly culinary craft experience, because that experience, like let's say you're having two or three high tides, even one, that experience is going to be a half hour of consumption. And the way I look at it, the way we look at it, is there's always going to be less expensive ways to consume cannabis. So if you're just looking to get from A to B, there's going to be less expensive ways to do that, less complex ways to do that. If you're going to utilize a beverage, it has to be a truly craft culinary experience, which is why we went down the painstaking process of what we did. We worked with a chef that has his PhD in food science and worked at the French Laundry, like the best restaurant in the world, arguably. And we crafted this thing with care, like rosemary salt, fresh lime, agave, because of all the things I'm saying. I think there is a giant market of people that want a truly culinary craft experience while they're consuming cannabis. And that's really what we wanted to fulfill on. I think the beverages that are going to win in the space are going to be ones that are truly delicious. And I know that sounds so simple, but when you look at the current state of cannabis beverage, that has not necessarily been at the forefront.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess that's, it's a difference between cannabis consumers, right? Some are just looking at THC content. Some are looking for the overall experience.
Well, okay. So that what you just said leads to another point, which is if you were to look at a 10 or let's call it 20 year horizon of high tide consumption, I think the majority of people that will consume high tide in 20 years, I could make an argument that more than 50% of them are not current cannabis users. So this gets into a whole nother subtopic of why I think beverage is a good form factor for cannabis. I think there are a lot of canna-curious people out there. And there are people that the idea of hitting a bong with seven chambers and, you know, this like elaborate naming convention to the weed that's going in there and having to break, like, it's a cool process. Like, people, like, I can see why they get into it, but like the customer we're going after, a lot of them are like maybe like a canna curious mom who has, you know, her glass of Pinot Noir on Friday night to relax after a long week of work and the kids and everything else. It's, you know, the 65-year-old retired grandfather who maybe used cannabis back in the 70s is interested in getting back into it. So when I look at the people that are our core consumers, this can be a good beverage for people who are used to cannabis. But really where I see the long-term play of this are people that either aren't current cannabis consumers or don't do it more than once or twice a year. When they're passed a joint at a concert or something like that. So that's like a whole nother avenue to go down. It's just this idea that like the cannabis market is just growing. More people are adopting it. The thing I would say on this is I remember when Colorado first became legal. And the big thing for Colorado, a lot of people that were pushing it forward were saying, this isn't going to attract new consumers to the space. This is just going to make illegal buyers now buy legally. BS. No way that that's true. And I think the data is playing out differently. And by the way, that's fine, but I'm a perfect example of someone who would be a new adopter to cannabis. So let me give the play out on this. So for me, when I was in my 20s, early 30s, cannabis wasn't legal in Massachusetts. I wasn't all that interested in the idea of meeting a drug dealer in the back of an alley and consuming cannabis in that way. It was illegal. And it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't my bag. And I think a lot of people I know in my circle feel exactly the same way. Now that cannabis is legal and you can go get it, you're allowed to consume it. And most importantly is that you know there are processes that will make it such you know what you're getting. I think the big thing in edibles that we see all the time is like, let's say someone's going to try high tide for the first time. One of the questions they often get is like, hey, I remember when I was in high school and my cousin's brother's friends made brownies and we ate one and we lost our mind for like 4 hours. So it's like the experience of like taking psilocybin or something. I think one of the things that this proliferation of legal cannabis is doing is allowing people to realize that they can have like a subtle experience on cannabis. They can consume and know that it's not going to shoot them to the moon, you know? And I think that's really important for new users.
So where do you source your raw materials? You talk about how you know, important it was putting together the recipe, putting together these really unique flavor profiles. How do you go about sourcing your materials?
Yeah, so I'd say I put them into two different subcategories. One of the subcategories would be the sort of, let's call it the liquid itself, the beverage, the flavor profile. And then the other would be the cannabis. So the cannabis, one thing I'll speak to on the cannabis side, first off, given how the laws work, as you and I'm sure most of your audience would know, we source that on a state-by-state basis. So whether or not we wanted to, might want to do this anyway, but the cannabis that we source for our Massachusetts beverage is coming from Massachusetts. So all these beverages are going to be local to that market, supporting the local cannabis economy, grown locally. So that's kind of a cool, almost forced part of this business is you have to source locally. The other thing I'll say about the cannabis side of this is I think one of the changes that occurred over the 6 year, 7 year period that I have been watching this space is the beverage form factor has gone from something that I think is actually fairly useless to super useful. And it's in one very specific technology, which is the nanoemulsification. So I think the idea of having a cannabis beverage that hits you in 5 minutes and leaves you in an hour is the change that makes cannabis beverage actually useful. So we work with our partner happens to be Source. They've been an excellent partner of ours. They help with the nanoemulsification such that we can get that medicinal social effect very quickly and it can leave you. If you had a cannabis beverage, let's say 6, 7, 8 years ago, that might not hit you for an hour and it could last for 3 hours, which makes the beverage form factor quite odd, right? So that's on the cannabis side. On the beverage side, as I had mentioned earlier, we went pretty ham on this, right? We probably went overboard. All the way down to, for example, it's a real pain for us to use fresh watermelon juice, right? Not the easiest decision we made, but I think it shows in the beverage. So, you know, we developed this through a partner and a chef and a consulting group where we developed the flavor profile. We're sourcing from folks all over the country such that when we go into New York or Arizona or California or Oregon, we can get all those same materials at national scale, but those materials aren't, you know, just some synthetic flavor in a soda water. We're talking about a truly craft experience where, you know, let's say the Diablo, for example, which is our spicy version, you're going to get some fresh pineapple up front. Then at the back of your tongue, you're going to get a little jalapeno and a little kick, not overwhelming, but it's going to be there. You have agave, you have rosemary salt. So in each one of our beverages, the things that we're bringing into the beverage should be like you're going on like a flavor journey where you might hit 4 or 5 different flavors throughout that sip, which is not an easy thing to pull off. What is pretty easy is taking like a standard, you know, whatever, soda or something like that and just infusing cannabis. So, you know, I would say we did not take the easiest path from point A to point B in the creation of the flavor profile. But we're betting that the consumers will really care about that.
Setting such a high standard when it comes to quality, how do you maintain that quality control in your supply chain to make sure there aren't any lapses?
Yeah, I mean, supply chain, I think, is a huge hot button in any industry right now. I remember I was reading something recently that they were talking about true, you know, in 10-year increments, CEOs of companies tend to come from a specific background. So there was like a time in the 90s where like CEOs were kind of CMOs. They came up through the marketing. And if you developed a brilliant marketing campaign, you were like the CEO. You were the right person for that job. There have been other times, like let's say the 80s, where it was like creative financing. So like generally CEOs came from a CFO background. And the point that was being made was the way that the world is working right now for the next 10 years, there's a good argument that that could be a COO or someone from supply chain ops because it's so critical to business in the next 10, 20 years. So for us, I mean, there was a lot of things that were involved in this. I would say that like redundancies are a big part of it. So making sure that if this one supplier that we're getting agave from isn't available, that we have another one backed up. But there was a pretty serious vetting process that occurred with a number of members on of our team to find the right partners that we knew wouldn't be going out of stock in these various flavor profiles. So, you know, I think on the cannabis front, it's interesting because some of the things that are happening on the macro level in cannabis that are not great for the industry are actually kind of great for us. So there is an oversupply of flower in the United States. Pricing on raw materials and flower is going down. You know, that's not great for publicly traded cannabis stocks, but it's actually kind of great for us. So, you know, I think there was a lot of different paths that go into it. But at the end of the day, outside of just growing our brand and our sales, making sure that the quality of beverage that we have put together is consistent each and every time is very, very critical to us. And I'll share a little anecdote that I think shows how important this is to us. We did a batch early, and you know, we were still in sort of testing ground, but it could have been a batch we brought to market. But we just simply weren't happy with that. And the reason for that was we felt like the pulp wasn't spread enough throughout the beverage. Something that honestly probably only us as beverage geeks would have even noticed. But it just wasn't enough for us. So I think if you follow the playbook, honestly, of someone like, you know, when I look at heroes in the beverage space, I think of someone like Jim at Sam Adams. Relentless. Relentless focus on quality. And if something wasn't up to their quality standards, they scrapped it. We're going to be the same way, because at the end of the day, with all the complexity of this industry and all the different things going on, at the end of the day, I think there's two things that make a brand. It's a brand that someone can resonate and a quality product consistently. And like, there is so much noise piled onto that, but that's what the consumer cares about. If they go and they get a high tide for the first time, we need to assure that there's two things that happen to them. One, when they go back, it's going to be on the shelf. So they're not going to stock out, which is actually a huge challenge in cannabis versus other spaces. And then the other is that that experience, both from a taste standpoint and from a effect standpoint, is going to be the same every time they go. They need that consistency. So it's a huge part of what we're doing and building. And as we grow, it has been very clear that me and Josh have a mandate of making sure that that doesn't, you know, we don't get ahead of our skis on that, that it's a consistent quality product every time someone goes.
How do you manufacture the product? Do you use co-packers?
We do. So, you know, we, as you and your audience knows, I mean, you have to produce in each state. We didn't want to go down the path. We want to build a brand and a quality product. So we didn't want to go down the path of creating our own manufacturing in every single space. So, you know, originally, I guess, anecdotally, as we first started to look into the space, there weren't a lot of co-packers that could do beverage. So when we first started looking at the space, let's say 3-4 years ago, we were originally thinking of creating our own beverage manufacturing facility. Excuse me. But as we started to explore the space, more and more folks started coming up that were that had the infrastructure and ability to create beverages. So we decided, look, like, we have precious capital and resources that we can focus on. What do we want to focus on? So not manufacturing, as someone who has owned a manufacturing facility before in the cold brew coffee space, so not cannabis, I realized that that's its own beast. It's its own hiring, its own training. It's a very rigorous process and one that we are happy to hand the keys over to with trusted partners. So a big portion of what we did in Massachusetts and what we will do in future states is make sure that we have the right partner that views the market the same way that we do, that has the same quality standards. But the short answer to your question is yes, we will be, you know, sort of a licensing play state by state in manufacturing facilities. We have one in Massachusetts, and we've already been in the process pretty deeply with our second, third, fourth, fifth states interviewing the possible co-packers in other states. But, you know, that's a market that I would say is growing leaps and bounds in terms of its quality and availability. I think if you were to look 10 years ago, the co-packing market would be very slim, whereas nowadays there are a lot of very, very capable people that have built amazing infrastructure. All of this to say, it goes back to your previous question, which is, we can't just hand something over to them and just say, okay, you're off and running. There is very definitely an onboarding process, a training, a watchful eye over that process to make sure it hits our quality standards.
How do you make sure when those customers come back, you're not out of stock or it's on the shelf?
I mean, this is an interesting one. You know, I think some of them are about order minimums, right? So look, like, hey, we're going to commit to you, and we're committing a lot of marketing dollars to this space in this area. You know, you have to commit to us. So it's about finding good partnerships. So for us, like, I would say the biggest thing for us is we're not just trying to go into every dispensary that will have us. Because at the end of the day, there are good dispensaries and there are bad dispensaries. There are dispensaries that are willing to invest in you as a brand partner. And those that are just looking to take something on for a little while and move on. And, you know, so we're very fixated on this idea that I think cannabis beverages can be a very habitual thing for people. So, like, once they get into the flow, it's going to be something they do on a regular basis. So we want to make damn sure, to your point that you were saying earlier, we want to make damn sure that when they go back there, it's on the shelves. So, you know, some of them is about getting the right order quantity up front and also committing to them. Hey, we're going to build a great display for you guys. We're going to make sure you're getting deliveries and pricing at the time and price that you want. But we're going through this interesting phase right now where it's sort of version 2.0 of this, where we have sold out of stores. So this is not something I anticipated, by the way, but we are selling out of stores so quickly that we can then take that data to the stores that are being onboarded and say, look, this is the actual data. This is the throughput. So you can't just sort of tiptoe into this, because if you do, you're going to run out of product. And then someone's going to come back and they're going to ask for it and you're not going to have it. And then we might either, we might collectively lose a customer, or they might simply just go to the dispensary that's 10 minutes down the road that has high tide. So it's sort of a collaborative effort with the dispensaries. I think there's, you know, we don't view our dispensaries as the sort of like vendor relationship. They're really business partners to us. So that requires a conversation where we talk about, you know, how do we appropriately stock for pop-ups and samplings? If you have events or we're doing specific deals, how do we make sure that you have enough product on site? If your locker's not big enough, right? So there's a big concern about locker space. There's only so much, and beverage takes up a lot of space. So can we work with them creatively to get on the right rhythm of deliveries such that you don't run out of product? So at the end of the day, I'd say the broad sweeping point is like viewing our dispensaries like they're a real partner to us, not just some vendor or some throughput. You know, again, going back to, I feel like I'm like discussing my business here right now when I keep talking about Jim from Sam Adams. But, you know, I remember reading things about him, and Josh had told me, who had worked for Sam Adams back in the day, you know, they viewed their outlets as their core main customer, and then they had end users. And there's something to that. It's like, at the end of the day, like, our direct partners are our dispensaries. So finding a way to be on the same sheet of music with them and making sure that we're both winning, you know, is super important.
You recently signed a partnership with Pedalfast on distribution. What are your expectations from that partnership?
So I will say Pedalfast has been amazing. So, you know, one of the things that we knew very quickly in this space is we're playing a little catch up. We're the new guys to the space. And one of the things that Pedalfast has been able to do for us is, you know, at the end of the day, Pedalfast and their success is going to be about the team, which they have done in unbelievable job at putting together. So the people that are, for example, doing our direct sales out in the market in Massachusetts, they're not newbies to the cannabis space. They've been with other brands, they're at the events, they have the connections. So for us, our partnership with them accelerated our ability to sort of like get ourselves into the market. You also, I mean, I could go on about Pedalfast for so long, but like, you also have a great deal of their management team. Not only do they have experience in cannabis, but a lot of them have long-reaching, long-standing relationship with the beverage space. So you have a lot of their folks on the executive team that had come from traditional CPG or beverage. And one of the things I always say that isn't being done in the cannabis space is using tried and true methods in the alcohol space and CPG space and applying them to cannabis in the appropriate way. There's a million subcategories of that, but I would say that Pedalfast just knocks that out of the park. Everybody from top down, from founders to management to the feet on the street, has been unbelievable to work with. And I say that truly and genuinely. And I say that as someone who's in my entrepreneurial journey, I've worked with a lot of partners in my life, and they can be real hit or miss. And to find a partner like Pedalfast that, again, it's not this sort of like vendor relationship. They are partners in our business. When we talk about, you know, quarterly meetings with them, it's long-term business strategy. It's not this transactional nature of, hey, go sell our product. Like, it is as if we are one merged team And I can't say enough about them. They've been a pleasure to work with. And honestly, at the end of the day, one thing I've realized in my entrepreneurial journey, half the battle is finding people that you like working with. And I really like working with them. Not only are they really effective, I just like, it's not one of those things like where I have a call and I'm like, oh God, I got to do this call. Like I get excited to talk to them. They're great partners and they're great to work with.
I know you got to get out of here soon. But you had mentioned that when you talk to other people that are interested in becoming entrepreneurs, you tell them about some of the nightmares that can come up, you know, and maybe it's not for them. What have been some of the nightmares at High Tide and how have you kind of navigated through them given your experience?
Well, it's interesting. So the reason I think that most, I would go as far as to say that I don't think most people should be entrepreneurs. I think there's like a, there's a misunderstanding of what it's really like to be an entrepreneur. And I'll put it this way. You know, with the prevalence of Shark Tank and, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, it's like, it's now become like this dream. Like, I just want to own my own company and I want to run my own thing and I want to make a ton of money and I want to, whatever. It's sort of become this cool thing in society to become an entrepreneur. The fact of the matter is it's a lot harder than people even think. I know there's an expectation that it's difficult, but it's way harder. And here's another way I'd put it, which I think articulates it perfectly. As an entrepreneur, your entire job is focusing your attention on the right things. At any given time, there's 150 things that you could focus your attention on. And spoiler alert, you pay attention to the things that aren't working well, because there's no reason to pay attention to the things that are working really well. There's nothing to be worked on there. So if you use that logic, essentially what you do as a job, as an entrepreneur, is you spend all day, every day, focusing on things that aren't working, trying to get them to work. Which, like, if you think about it that way, it's not a great gig for most people. I happen to love that because it's like constantly creative problem solving, and it can be really fulfilling when you solve those problems. But like at the end of the day, like you're going to get to the end of your work day and it's not like you're just going to be like, okay, well my work's done for the day and now I'm good to go. Like there's always things to do. And I'd say for us, particularly in cannabis, I mean, you have like this competing force, which is that cannabis itself is so high growth. There's so much revenue and money pouring into it more and more every year. But then the sort of opposite of that coin is that it can be a very difficult space to operate in for a number of different reasons, whether they be legal or insurance or funding or whatever. So we've gone through all of those challenges. And I think the big thing, honestly, at this time frame, the way I would answer it is for me, it's been like drinking water from a fire hose in just the learning experience, right? Because I know the entrepreneurial game. I know how to build a business. I know there's going to be challenges. I know how to handle those challenges. I know how to do all the standard things of entrepreneurship. But what was new to me is cannabis. So we have spent, myself and Josh have spent the last 3 years of our life literally soaking in as much information as possible. And there's a lot of information out there. So, you know, if you were to have this interview with me 4 years ago, it would be comical. I would have known nothing about the cannabis space. I would have known very surface level. But I think the challenge for us has been taking in as much information from as possible, being humble, honestly, as someone who has like come from a fairly successful entrepreneurial background, going into a space, it's almost like, you know, it reminds me of when I was like on skis back in the day and I switched to snowboard and I was back on the Green Mountains, you know, so there's some of that going on. So I think the real challenge has just been understanding the market, how it works, what's legal, what's not legal, how business actually gets developed. It takes a while to get that. And I think we're getting it. It's still a learning process, but I think it's really been a knowledge transfer that's been the big challenge. But I think we've done a good job at it, and we've really made an effort to listen to the people that really know what they're doing and have been in the space for a while and understand them and their thoughts on it. But it's been a fun challenge.
Shay, thank you very much for taking the time today. I do appreciate it. Is there anything else that you want to make sure that, you know, maybe we left out, or you want to make sure the Cannabis Equipment News audience either knows about yourself or High Tide?
I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, you know, my thing would be to say that, like, your audience is deeply rooted in the cannabis space. And I guess what I would say is that Josh and I are here for the long haul, right? So we are our intention from the first day that we came up with the name and the brand, you know, our intention was to become a nationally recognized brand in the cannabis space. So we have grand aspirations for this. We're not going to be one state and done. And because of that, and some of the things I referenced earlier, our goal is to develop the best partnerships we possibly can. And I'm sure a lot of your audience fits squarely in that partnership umbrella. So what I would say to your audience is, like, whether we've talked to you already or at some point we bump into you at a convention or when we're looking into new states, like, we're just really looking forward to getting to know a lot of your audience, and I'm sure we will in the coming years. So I would say, in closing, look out for us. We're coming. We have grand aspirations for this. And the thing, honestly, we get almost more excited about than anything is, like, we get to work with really, really great people. I've met some of the greatest people I've ever met in my life in the cannabis space, and I love every second of it. And I can't wait to meeting more of them.
Shay, thank you again for taking the time, man. It's been very enlightening.
This was awesome. I really appreciate it. Love what you guys do.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You could also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. If you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com with email the podcast in the subject line. You can also subscribe to our daily newsletter. Make sure you get it delivered to your inbox first. For Shay Coakley, co-founder and CEO of High Tide, I'm David Manti. This is the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast.